two.
Lara is on.
Okay.
As well as Greg and my case, so yes. Okay, so it is 3:31, and I will begin with roll call. Commissioner Steve Pope.
I'm here.
Commissioner Lynn Gessie.
I'm here.
Thank you. Commissioner Asu Navarrete.
I'm here.
Thank you. Commissioner Becky Quintero. I see that she's on. Hello, Becky. I am going to pause and give Ward 5 a call. I believe she may joining remotely from there. Hold on 1 second.
Diane is talking with them, and they're getting her connected now.
All right, thank you. Okay, so she is signed on now. Becky, are you there?
Okay, there's a mute. I'm here.
Okay, great, thank you. Commissioner Robin McArdle?
Here.
Thank you. Okay, it looks like we have a quorum and we may proceed with the meeting.
All right. We've had the roll call. Let's do the approval of the minutes from the October 26th meeting. Anybody have any additions, corrections for the minutes that were sent out? I hear none. One more time. Does anybody have any additions or corrections to the minutes from the October 26th meeting? All right, then they will stand as approved, or they will they will be approved as presented. All right, the next item is called the audience. At this time, any member of the public is allowed to address the committee. Speakers are limited to 3-minute presentations pursuant to the Arizona Open Meetings Law. Individual committee members may ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda or respond to criticism made to the speakers. However, the committee may not discuss or take legal action on matters raised during call to the audience. Diana, do we have anyone who has pre-filed for call to the audience?
I didn't receive any emails previously, so I don't have any that had signed up previously, but let me take a quick look at the, and I don't see any hands up for anybody.
All right. And if we have no one who wishes to participate in the call of the audience, let's go on to item number four, the city clerk's presentation about the open meeting law. Is the person from the city clerk's office there and available?
Hi there, this is Shauna from the city clerk's office.
Thank you, Shauna. Go right ahead.
All right. I'm going to share my screen. Let me know if you can see, if you can hear before I proceed.
So far, so good. Both.
All right. Great. So the open meeting law in Arizona is one of the older sunshine laws in the country. It was implemented back in the 60s, and it has two main concepts. One is that all meetings be conducted openly with your notices and agendas containing enough information to inform the public about your activities. And the second core concept is that it provides the public access to government and ensures that the people's business is conducted openly. So it really boils down to, is the public informed and do they have access? So how is a meeting defined? It is defined as a gathering in person or through technological devices of a quorum of a public body at which legal action is discussed, proposed, deliberated, or taken. And all boards and commissions and any subcommittees they may have are all considered public bodies. So something to be careful about is holding an illegal meeting that the public has not been given proper notice of. So that easily happens when you're emailing or calling each other, texting, social media posts back and forth. So we recommend that all communication go through your support staff, your city staff, to avoid inadvertently conducting an illegal meeting through your technological devices. So we'll get into that a little bit later, but that seems to be usually where people get tripped up and don't realize that they're going down the wrong path. So some of the open meeting law elements are that public notice is required. The public must be permitted to attend and listen. Call to the audience, surprisingly, is not required under the open meeting law, but the city does tend to include it as a common practice in all of their meetings. Again, it's not required, but we do usually include it. Any member of the public is allowed to record the meeting, whether audio recording or video recording. The person recording cannot be disruptive in doing so, though. So you do still need to be allowed to conduct your meeting. The room must be large enough to hold the number of people reasonably expected to attend. So if you think you're going to be getting a large turnout, you'll need to find a room or a facility large enough to accommodate that crowd. You don't want to have the public be unable to attend because you didn't choose a large enough facility. So again, think about, is the public informed and can they attend? And their attendance, you also have to be thinking about, is it ADA accessible if you're holding an in-person meeting? So that's another consideration to think about. Any legal action that the commission takes must occur during your public meeting, and written minutes are required including for any subcommittees you may have. So again, that gets back down to, is the public informed? More elements, and we'll get into each of these on the following slides, but what the open meeting law provides for is an agenda that contains enough information for the public to be informed about the matters you're discussing. It requires that a quorum be established, provides for call to the audience, doesn't require it, but it provides for it. It allows executive sessions in very rare circumstances. It requires legal action reports, and it requires minutes. And I just realized I forgot to let you know, I cannot see if anyone is raising their hand. So if you want to interject and ask a question or ask clarification, go ahead and speak up because I can't see if you're raising your hands. So your meeting notice requirements, your agenda, has to be posted conspicuously in a public place. We post your agendas at City Hall in the lobby. We also post them on the city's website, which is another requirement of the open meeting law. Your agendas have to be posted at least 24 hours before the meeting. So we do request that you provide them to us at least 2 business days in advance. That allows us time to do our processing before it gets posted online and in the lobby of City Hall. The agendas must describe specific matters to be discussed. Any non-specific announcements, reports, or future agenda items, those can be on your agenda, but only for the announcement, only for the statement, not for back and forth discussion. So you may have, you know, an announcement from the chair or a report from the director. You might have an item to identify future agenda items. Those are allowed, but again, you cannot have discussion on them. So you really get into tricky territory when you're identifying an item you want on a future agenda. You can only say, I would like to have this item placed on the next agenda. You can't get into the back and forth of discussing that item at that point in time. Because remember, the public has not been informed about that discussion, whatever item you start discussing. So for the same reason, having a generic new business item or old business item is also not sufficient to tell the public what you're going to be discussed, what is going to be discussed. I understand there was maybe some clarification required on what can be, let me go back a slide, what can be included in your discussions. And so I just wanted to cover the functions of the commission. So I don't know if you have your data page that is available on the city's webpage, on our boards and commissions webpage. I'm going to switch to that right now. Okay, I hope you can see this. So this is the data page for this commission. The functions, there are 3 functions or purposes, and those are to make recommendations to the governing body regarding recreational activities and facilities of the city, to review as needed policies and procedures regarding parks and recreational operations, fees, and name changes, and to make recommendations to the governing body regarding those, and to serve as a citizens' communication and advocacy conduit regarding parks and recreation programs and facilities. So your agendas should stick to the purpose of the commission, which are these 3 points outlined on this data page. If you need a copy of this, I can certainly get it to Diana. She can share it with you. It is available on the boards and commissions webpage, and we can share that with you as well. So let me go back to the PowerPoint. Okay, there we go. So you've got your meeting notice posted. Now you need a quorum. So a quorum is considered 51% or a majority of the authorized voting membership. So if you have any vacancies, that does not reduce the number you need to make quorum. So I don't know, I think you have 7 members. If you have 7 members authorized, you need 4 people for quorum, even if you only have 4 people appointed. So that is a reason that we try to make sure all of your seats are filled as much as we can get the appointers to fill those seats. So if you don't have a quorum, what happens? If you know, say you find out the day of the meeting, you're not going to get enough people in attendance to make quorum, you're going to post your notice on the door of the meeting room, or in this case, we'll try to get it online for you as quickly as possible. But your notice will say that the meeting has been canceled due to lack of quorum. So that, again, this is going back to, is the public informed? You want to tell the public who tried to join the meeting or show up for the meeting that the meeting has been canceled. You don't want them waiting around and milling around wondering what happened. I thought there was a meeting. If you think you're going to have a quorum and it turns out you're waiting around, not enough members show up, a good practice is to wait 15 minutes. That's an acceptable amount of time. And after those 15 minutes, take attendance. So do roll call. And if you don't have enough members, then you got to cancel the meeting. You do want to formally take roll call so that you can have the legal action report and the minutes reflect who was present, who was absent, that the meeting was canceled because of lack of quorum. Again, you would post a notice that the meeting was canceled and why. If you're meeting in person, you want to do that, post the notice on the door of the facility. That way anyone who shows up after you cancel the meeting will understand, oh, all right, that's why nobody's here. Anyone who is absent when you take that roll call, those absences count towards the attendance requirements for all of the members. So that's another reason that you want to take attendance, do a formal roll call, and have that documented in the record. If you have enough members to start your meeting, but barely enough, and someone has to leave early, you have to stop the meeting. You cannot proceed without that quorum. If someone has to step away to take a phone call or use the restroom, you'll recess the meeting until you can reconstitute the quorum. So if that one member comes back from the restroom, comes back from taking that phone call, you can then restart the meeting. The 15 minutes, it's a guideline unless you have it written in your bylaws. I'm not sure if this commission has bylaws, but some do, and some bylaws will state a specific amount of time that they have to wait before canceling a meeting. So go by whatever your bylaws say if it says that. If not, then the 15 minutes is an acceptable amount of time. If you have people scheduled to make a presentation, you still cannot have them present the information without that quorum. So you need your quorum in order to do anything. Okay. Call to the audience. As I said, it's allowed under the open meeting law, but it's not required. It does allow the public an opportunity to have their say, but it cannot become a discussion. Again, because whatever they're bringing up was not agendized as a discussion. So the committee or the commission can request that staff review the matter. They can ask that it be placed on a future agenda, or a member of the commission can respond to direct criticism. Executive sessions are allowed under the open meeting law, but generally city BCCs do not do anything that would qualify for an executive session, which means that the executive session means the public is not allowed to attend. So because the public's not allowed to attend, the state really limits situations that qualify for that. So if there were a situation that you think this commission needs to have an executive session, we would get in touch with the city attorney's office, make sure everything, all the legal requirements are met, and they would help guide you through all that. But I don't believe there would be a reason that this commission would need an executive session. Okay, legal action. It is defined as a collective decision, commitment, or promise made by the public body pursuant to the Arizona Constitution, the city charter, your bylaws, or the specified scope of your appointment, or the laws of the state of Arizona. So all legal action, remember, decisions, agreements, commitments, as well as votes, must occur during an open public meeting. And you must report all your legal action. So the legal action report has to list all of the legal action that was taken for each agenda item. It is due within 3 working days after the meeting. And those remain posted on our website for 1 year. They are a permanent public record. So again, that's in an attempt to make sure the public is informed. Minutes are a little more lengthy. They must include the name of the public body, the date, time, and location of the meeting. They must list all the names of members present and absent, including if someone arrives late or leaves early. If they step out for 5 minutes, that should be included. A general description of the items covered and the actions taken, including motions and votes. The names of whoever is making statements and presenting materials to you. And they must be in writing. An audio recording is optional, and if you do have that, it is a temporary placeholder for your minutes until you get your written minutes prepared. You cannot withhold the minutes just because they haven't been prepared, so the audio recordings satisfies that requirement. The recording of the meeting or the written minutes must be available within 3 days of the meeting. If you don't have them formally approved yet, you can have a draft or unofficial version available to the public until you do approve those minutes. Once you approve your minutes, those get posted on our website within 2 days after approval, and those become a permanent public record. Okay. So now, violations, which is kind of really why we're here, right? It is a violation of the open meeting law for one member to send a message to a quorum of the other members proposing legal action, even if the other members don't respond or take the exchange any further. So again, this easily happens when you're calling people, texting, sending emails. And that frequently happens inadvertently. So what happens is the daisy chain where person A calls person B then calls person C texts person D, and on. So it doesn't start with the quorum, but eventually it ends up with the quorum discussing the business of the commission. And the spoken wheel method would be where I'm communicating with one member, and then I'm communicating with another member. Then I communicate with a third member, and eventually I've created a quorum by doing that and discussing matters of the commission, which should be done in an open public venue that the public has been informed of and can attend. Consensus building is something that sometimes happens inadvertently, again, through, you know, hey, I think this is a great idea. What do you think? Limit all your conversations to the meetings. Because anything that could become a potential agenda item, you've already discussed this, you've already, you know, had your say, and the public hasn't been privy to that. So during the meeting, you want to stay on track. Don't wander off topic, because again, the public needs to be informed of what you're going to be discussing. So keep to the agenda and don't wander off topic. And to keep it simple and not have to worry about whether you're heading down the wrong path, just send all your communications to your staff and let them disseminate it for you. That's the easiest way to make sure that you're not going to be in violation. If there is a violation, the open meeting law is enforced by the Arizona Attorney General. It's usually complaint-driven, and it is one of the stricter laws in the country. And by strict, I really mean that it is in favor of transparency. So remember, the open meeting law is trying to make sure the public is informed and they have access to your business that you're conducting. But if you are found to be in violation, you are personally liable as a citizen. The city attorney cannot defend you as a member of this commission. You will be fined up to $500 per violation, and you will be removed from the commission. Conflicts of interest. I don't think that there would be any situation that one of you would need to declare a conflict of interest, but if you or your relative has a substantial interest in any contract, sale, purchase, or service to such public agency, so to the city, or in this instance, maybe to just specifically to Parks and Recreation, you shall make known that interest in the official records of the commission and then refrain from voting or otherwise participating on that matter. And if you have a substantial interest in any decision of the public agency, you'll make known that interest in the official records and refrain from participating in such decision. So what is a substantial interest? It's any pecuniary or proprietary interest, either direct or indirect, other than a remote interest. Usually the simplest way to think of it is there some financial gain? So if you determine that you have a substantial interest and there may be a conflict before the meeting, you want to advise the chairperson that you are going to declare a conflict of interest. You'll verbally recuse yourself from participating in that item. During that item, you'll refrain from discussion, voting, or anywhere attempting to influence the decision by the rest of the members. So, you know, as it's being discussed, no nodding your head, you know, in agreeance, or, you know, shaking it to disagree or whatever. You just want to be a fly on the wall. And then your declaration of the conflict must be reflected in the minutes of the meeting. So that was the open meeting law in a nutshell. But this is the website that I was referring to that has your data page. This is where we post your agendas, your legal action reports, your minutes. The Parks and Rec Commission has its own page for all of your documents, and each of the other BCCs have their own pages for their documents. If you have any questions, I'm able to field them now, or we can also be reached by phone. Our email address is also available on this website. So with that, I will stop sharing my screen.
Thank you very much, Shauna. Appreciate that. Do any of the members of the commission have any questions for Shauna? I'm not seeing any reaction. So thank you very much. I believe that item is completed, and let's go on to the Rio Vista Master Plan. Is that you, Laura?
I think I'm taking this one.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Sorry about that.
No problem. Today we are asking you, we're going to do a quick presentation on the Rio Vista Natural Resource Park Master Plan. We have Rick Jones and Eva Zambrano from the Smith Group with us today. They're going to pull up a presentation while I'm doing some introductory comments here. Tom Fisher was the project manager who led this on behalf of Parks and Recreation. We did this master plan for two reasons. You know, we have some Prop 407 Parks and Connections funding for this park, and we wanted to make sure that the improvements we made were consistent with what the community wanted. And number two, in our park system master plan, we don't actually have a definition for a natural resource park. Even though we have two or three of them labeled natural resource parks within our park system, we don't define what that is. So we use this master planning process to really help us kind of define what a natural resource park system is and how we should manage those in a park system. So I'm going to turn it over to Rick to go through the information. We are asking you to take action on this today. We're asking for you to approve the master plan or make any recommended changes to the master plan and then forward it to Mayor and Council for final adoption. So, Rick.
Thank you, Greg. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Yes, it's a little light.
Let me see if I can do something about that. I apologize. Usually I'm too loud. How about that? Any better?
There you go.
Okay. And do you guys see my screen?
Yes.
All right. Quick background, just to get this out of the way. Rio Vista Natural Resource Park is located just south of the Rito River, north of Prince Road, east of Tucson Boulevard. It has direct access to the loop path. The park itself is about 40 acres in size. It's predominantly comprised of kind of a native desert landscape that occupies most of the east portion, as well as a large part of the north portion of the park, which contains a circuit of trails for walking and biking and equestrian. There's some developed active use areas to the west of the park that include parking lot, entry plaza, interpretive garden, playground area, large turf open space, as well as kind of some ramadas and some restroom facilities. To build a little bit on what Greg said, talk a little bit about our process of developing the master plan. The first thing we wanted to do was establish some goals, which included documenting the park history and the existing natural character of the park, identify the current uses and amenities, and analyze their condition in their present form, develop a public consensus that could help steer goals and strategies for future development, and then from that establish kind of a prioritization of what improvements were to take place with the budget that we had to work with. Our project understanding started with really, you know, understanding some discovery of the park history. We did that through speaking with project stakeholders, our partners in the Parks and Rec Department, as well as reviewing previous master plans and related studies. As Greg said, we worked with him and Tom to develop a definition of a natural resource park, which kind of the shorter version is a desert open space that supports ecological systems, including wildlife habitat, water resources, endangered species, with no more than 15% of the total site area being devoted to developed amenities. Next, we began our kind of boots on the ground, like on-site surveys, site visits, analysis phase, where we documented the existing conditions of the park, its related facilities and amenities, which we then cataloged in a draft master plan booklet that basically reflected that inventory and analysis findings, and detailed the major amenities of the park with supporting plans and images and other graphics and some appendices. We had a public input process that included some public meetings, some stakeholder meetings, and an online survey. And then finally, we took all the information we gathered, all that we learned from the input of the public engagement process, and combined it into a refined master plan booklet that developed a series of targeted improvement recommendations for the future of the park. Real quick, our schedule, we kicked off the project in early 2022, basically did our discovery phase, our site analysis and inventory phase in the spring, then had some public engagement kicking off as we entered the summer. We continually worked on developing the master plan draft, released the survey, collected more input, worked back and forth with Greg and Tom, kept making refinements, gathered information from the survey, had another public engagement session to kind of present our findings and collect more feedback, and then ultimately, developed the final master plan booklet. All in all, it took a little over 8 months, and it basically got us to where we are today. Real quick, these are some of the prior master plans. The first of which was created in the late 1990s. I think it was a little too urban in relation to the park amenities that were proposed. I don't think it went over too well. It therefore was never realized. A few years later, in 2004, another master plan was done, which really kind of embraced the native natural desert character of the site more. It became the footprint of the park that we see out there today. Recently, in the past few years, there's been two additional master plans created by some stakeholder groups that really focus more on preservation and restoration of the more native desert sites. A lot of great information that we absorbed and reflected in some of the work that we did and included as an appendices for reference. So our inventory analysis phase basically was a series of on-site investigations where we mapped and documented the location of all the passive and active park uses, related site amenities, pedestrian circulations and trail network, signage, supporting areas, facilities, and overall systems. This kind of gives you an idea of kind of what some of these exhibits look like. It's included in our master plan as sort of a guide as to what led us to start to develop priorities and recommendations for future development. This is just an example section from our master plan booklet. Basically, it is all that information that we gathered, that we cataloged and put in the booklet form. It provides each section that relates to the existing park amenities, and it's got focused information about that specific amenity, its conditions, and some potential design updates for consideration. In addition, we provided the information we gathered on the park history and past studies, information detailing our process, documented our public engagement process, information on cost studies, and then ultimately the final version included the prioritized improvements for the future. A little bit more about the public engagement process. As I said, we had two formal public meetings. One was kind of at the end of our inventory and analysis. This held at the park, great attendance. We had another one that kind of followed our towards the end of the draft master plan booklet, kind of moving into the final considerations for additional feedback, which we then rolled into further development and refinements of that final study. A little information on the public survey. In between those public meetings I just mentioned, a survey was released online, obviously to cast a wider net for public reaction and input. I believe it was online and active for about 3 weeks. I think the overall number of respondents was just over 300. It included about 12 questions relating to the frequency of park users' visits, their use of the amenities, their attitudes towards the existing as well as, proposed amenities, and some resident demographics that kind of gave us a better idea of kind of who the typical park user was. The questions were kind of multiple choice and kind of direct select, but there was an area where you could provide additional feedback, and there was a very robust response. I think we had over 90 responses out of 300 that some went into great detail. A lot of very passionate people. Overall, great return and great engagement experience. And that led us to again, taking all that aggregate information and feedback and rolling it into what we developed as our kind of focus park improvement recommendations. What we found from the survey was that most of the people that use the park, there was a high majority of those folks that use the park regularly for its more passive uses, the walking, hiking trails. And similarly, the areas where they really wanted to see focus on improvements related to a lot of those kind of passive uses, which kind of just sort of made sense after all kind of went through what we saw, what we heard. I failed to mention that in our analysis and inventory, we realized that this park has some really great bones. You know, some areas need work. Some areas need a little bit more work. But all in all, you know, some fairly simple improvements for each of these areas, I think, can improve the overall aesthetics, you know, provide opportunities to educate the public, improve the user experience, and enhance the site ecology for both the native vegetation and the corresponding wildlife that uses it. So the actual improvements, they're listed here. In general, a lot of focus was on how can we consolidate the existing trail system. I think over time there's been a lot of trailblazing where the larger kind of network of trails have been complicated with, you know, cut-throughs, and which has then kind of caused some disturbance. So a focus was to kind of confine, consolidate, define that trail network, close off some of these minor trails, then revegetate these areas that were disturbed. So the revegetation of the disturbed areas would include, you know, adding more native vegetation, expanding the irrigation to feed these new plantings, as well as sort of delineate the trail edge to prevent further kind of off-trail explorations. Upgrading trail network signage for both kind of just directional wayfinding, as well as including interpretive signage to educate the public on the native landscape was a target. Providing more seating throughout some of these passive areas at select kind of locations, which we term nodes, that kind of offered like great distant views or kind of more intimate kind of reflection areas. Another big target was there's a centrally located riparian area that's kind of at the middle of the park. It's kind of a remnant of a wash. Or historic wash, but it still collects water, you know, during specific seasons. And the idea was, you know, there could be some enhancement there to, again, elevate opportunities for wildlife. And tied to that was what could we do to explore passive means for stormwater harvesting for both on-site and off-site, capturing water from paved areas and kind of cycling and conveying it through the site to help augment kind of irrigation demand. And then some other areas included some minor landscape improvements, primarily at some of the entry points. The landscape there, could use a bit of a refresh. There's an interpretive garden that's, just off the main entry, to the pedestrian, kind of looped walk that has an interpretive piece that's got a little bit long in the tooth and you could use a refresh. And then some minor improvements just to the overall kind of perimeter fencing, just to better define the extents of the park, and again, keep people kind of from kind of cutting through areas that we are suggesting that we have re-veg material and kind of keep that safe. So all in all, basically we took what we learned, kind of work back and forth, develop these priorities, tried to measure them against the budget. And then we found that, you know, the nature of the park as a natural resource park, I mean, they're few and far between these days. You know, there's already a great kind of fabric out there that really could deserve a little bit of enhancement, I think, to overall make, you know, a great resource for open space in the city of Tucson. Is there anything you wanted to add, Greg?
You're still muted, Greg.
No. Sorry about that. Yes, no, you covered it pretty well, Rick. Let's just open it up to questions.
All right, questions from the commission? Please chime in because I'm not seeing. Oh, I see. Whoops. I thought I saw a hand.
Yeah.
Robin.
Oh, Robin. Okay, Robin.
Hi there. I'm Robin, and I'm representing Ward 3 on the commission, which Rio Vista Park is in. I really want to commend the stakeholders, the Friends of Rito Vista, Rito Bend Neighborhoods, the Smith Group. Tom Fisher did an exceptional job, Parks and Rec staff. My passion in life is to see these public processes move forward and for you to really hear what the neighborhood has to say. It's obvious that you did. You did hear them and concerns that they had and brought to Councilmember Dahl were heard, and it gives them great faith in the process. And as I'm listening to the presentation on the purpose of boards and commission, and that we do serve as a citizen advocacy conduit, I have to say that I was assured the neighborhood felt very certain that this would not be on the agenda for approval today, that it was on the December agenda. In fact, they have that, I believe they have that in writing. And so I was not aware that this was on for approval. I would love to approve this plan, but it's, you know, I want to cross the finish line on this. Because the neighborhood called and, you know, and I know that they were told it would be on the December agenda, I'd like to discuss that.
Other questions? Greg, I don't know whether this question is for you or for Rick, but I do remember reading in the report that there were several things in the Parks and Connections bond back in the late 2010s that had to do with some more urban park amenities that have been excluded here. What is the difficulty, or is there any difficulty, in changing priorities that were as part of the bond issue and changing them to other priorities for a natural resource park? Does that question make sense?
Yep, Mr. Chairman, I can take that for you. What we will do is we will go to the Bond Oversight Commission. I think they're actually meeting on Monday, December 5th, and we will take a recommendation to the Bond Oversight Commission. They've actually developed criteria for changing projects. And two of the criteria that that commission has established for changing projects was if there's a technical difficulty that results in us not being able to do a project. For example, we had a lighting project that was supposed to go on an old landfill site. Well, it just became technically impossible for us to do that project. Another criteria is community feedback or staff concerns with whether the project makes sense. So in this case, there was the bond called for a splash pad at this park. You know, through the community engagement process, it became apparent that a splash pad is probably not the appropriate thing in a natural resource park. So we will take a recommendation to the Bond Oversight Commission to change the scope of from a splash pad to whatever the priorities are in the approved master plan. So once master plan gets approved by mayor and council, the recommendation is we work through this list of priorities you're seeing in front of us with the bond dollars that are available.
All right. Thank you very much. Other questions from the commission? Greg, do you want to address Robin's concern about the notification of the neighborhood with the proceeding of this?
I don't have an answer to that. I don't think the Park Commission has a meeting scheduled in December, so I think this is the meeting that was rolled together with the December and November rolled together for one meeting, so I think this is the meeting we were intending to bring it to the whole time, but I think ended up on November 30th as opposed to December 1st or whatever day in December.
Okay. Laura, do you have anything to chime in? Oh, wait a minute. I see. Is it Manon? Is that whose hand that is?
Yeah, it is. It is me. I'm kind of with Robin on this. I don't remember this. And I did think we, because we hadn't made quorum so many times, that we do have a meeting in December, don't we?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that one.
I thought we did that as well, figured that out last meeting as well, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, there's a meeting on the calendar for the 28th of December. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be up for discussion, you know, to move forward with it, cancel, and whatnot. Yeah, there's one on the calendar.
Okay.
Yeah, from my perspective, it makes no difference whether we do it today or we do it in December or January. The recommendations are what the recommendations are.
Okay.
What, Greg, say that again. It does make a difference or it doesn't?
It does not.
Okay. I feel, you I mean, know, the next, you're really, like I said, I'm just so, I'm impressed with the process. I'm impressed that the neighborhood and that the stakeholders were heard. And I really, other than that, if we could get it on the December agenda and really encourage everybody, make sure we have a quorum. I think the neighborhood and obviously everybody involved in this really deserves to have that approved.
I agree with Robin on that.
Any other questions or comments on that topic or anything about Rio Vista? All right.
So instead of voting on an approval, can we make a motion to move it to the December agenda for approval?
I was just going to make that suggestion. So if you want to make that motion, please feel free.
I make a motion that we move the Rio Vista Master Plan approval vote to the December commission meeting.
All right. Is there a second?
I will second that.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any discussion on that? Then hearing no discussion, seeing no hands raised, all those in favor of deferring this to the December 28th meeting of the commission, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
I think I heard at least three. All right. So that should pass, and we'll put that on the agenda for the next meeting so that the Rio Vista group and the Neighborhood Association can all be informed of when it is on the agenda. All right. Anything else on Rio Vista before we go on to Linden? All right. Greg, are you handling Linden or is that somebody else?
Mr. Chairman, I think I'm handling Linden as well, so I am going to share my screen. I believe the nature of this request last month was about the community engagement that we held for this project. So I thought we would take this opportunity, and let me share here. I thought we'd take this opportunity to kind of go through a presentation, and Sierra and I are going to tag team it on how we go about community engagement when we're handling projects for capital improvements. So let's try this here. Give it a second. Are you seeing a blank screen as well?
There something comes up.
Are we up? Are we up there now?
Yes. It says community relations plan overview.
Yep, that's it. So we're going to kind of go through, Sierra's got a whole, basically a policy and procedure for community relations and how we go out and engage the community. So we're going to kind of give you a Reader's Digest version of what that process looks like today. When we go out and do community engagement, especially for capital projects, what our goal is really to cast a wide net and try to get, as much of the target audience that we are trying to hear from as possible. And that's by using different approaches, different technologies. You know, in the old days, many of you are probably familiar, we would do community workshops. We'd meet at a rec center and we would take, public comments there. The one challenge that we often saw in those, it seemed like the loudest voice always one. You know, so we don't want to fall in the trap that the loud voice is the only person we listen to. The goal is that we hear as many voices as we can hear from and then try to you know, appease the most voices, not just the loudest voice. So the better community engagement we do, the more people we engage with and get feedback from, you know, that builds confidence in us as a department that we're hearing the community and we're doing what they what they want done in the parks. And we will send this whole presentation. I'm not going to read every bullet on every slide. I'm going to highlight things, but we'll send it out to you afterwards. So this kind of just, you know, gives you a good illustration of how we handle the engagement process. And this is going to be different based upon the scope of the project. You know, a smaller project we'll touch on in a little bit might not have as much engagement. A full-fledged master plan like we just talked through for Rio Vista, we're going to have a lot of engagement. So when we go into planning, typically as we start the planning, we'll go out and talk to the community. We'll get feedback. We'll do some kind of some preliminary design concept. Again, we'll go back out, we'll get feedback from the community, and then we roll into final design, construction, and completion. So that just kind of gives you a quick picture of what the overall process looks like, and that process can take 8 months to 18 months. So when we get into planning, what does that mean from our perspective? That means we've assigned it to a project manager. We've got someone who's responsible for taking this project all the way from the design all the way through construction. We look at kind of the scope of the project, whether it's small, medium, or large, and oftentimes that helps dictate how much public engagement we're going to actually have. For larger projects, we'll reach out to ward offices, see if they want to do groundbreakings, those types of things. And at this stage, we are typically bringing a consultant on board that's going to help us work through the process. So when I say the size of the project, what am I talking about? For smaller projects, you know, just a shade structure over a playground, a resurfacing of a basketball court or a tennis court, or resurfacing of a walking path or upgrading lights, we may not do any community engagement because, quite frankly, there's nothing that we can ask them to change in the project. You know, if we're lighting a softball field and we're converting that to LED lighting, there's no reason to engagement because there's nothing I can go to them and say, hey, do you want this or this? So for a lot of these projects, we will not do a whole lot of engagement. If it's a pretty active neighborhood association and we're doing a resurfacing basketball court, we might do a quick survey and just ask them what color they might want. But if it's just a walking path and we're just resurfacing it, we aren't going to do any community engagement. We're just going to go in there and take care of the project. As we get into slightly larger projects, here we're more likely to do some type of engagement. Pool decks, we aren't going to. It's just going in there and resurfacing and redoing those. There's nothing really to get clarification on. Pool slides, we typically don't because we don't really have a lot of choices in slides, budgets dictating the size of the slide. As we get into things like irrigation, where we're determining where we might irrigate or adding trees, we will definitely do engagement. Replacing playgrounds, we always do public engagement. If we're adding lighting to fields, we always do public engagement. New walking paths, doing public engagement. And when we get into larger projects, then we're going to have multiple engagement meetings, and we'll give you some examples of those here in a second. So as we get in design, you know, that's where we've got our consultant on board. We kind of understand what the scope is. And that's when we go out and start talking to the community and finding out, okay, what do you want done? What are your priorities? And we do this in a couple of different ways. One of the key ways we do that is by online surveys. You know, you heard in the last presentation how we did an online survey, and we're going to go into some details on how we do our surveys and the feedback we get. We will do virtual public meetings. You know, this has become the common way to reach out to the public, especially since COVID. In some cases, these work really, really well. I'm still a big fan of in-person events, so we still do in-person events as well. It's always good to get face-to-face, but usually a combination or all three of these for the larger engagement-type projects. As we get into engagement, you know, there's multiple ways that we can reach out to make the community aware that we are actually doing some type of project. And again, this is going to be dependent on the scope. We may put a presentation up in a rec center and leave it up for a week or two and ask for comments. I think we did that with the UDOL splash pad. You know, we had a couple different options of equipment that people could choose from, and we left those boards up in the rec center so that people were coming in, would see some different options, and they'd give us feedback on what they liked. We often do presentation at neighborhood meetings. We will conduct intercept surveys in the park, especially if we're working in a neighborhood where we think technology may be a challenge and people aren't getting notifications via social media. We will just send somebody to the park and capture people as they're coming through the park and actually have an iPad and ask them to take the survey right on the spot. It's just kind of a quick, easy way to gather info from people that are actually using the park. On rare occasions, we'll actually canvas a neighborhood. Again, if we know there's technology challenges, we will send a group of people out through the new neighborhood, whether with a clipboard, with a paper survey, and or iPad to try to gather information in the neighborhood by canvassing. We do a lot of promotion via social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Nextdoor, and LinkedIn. We often send information out via email blast, include it in newsletters, whether that's our own newsletter and or a ward office newsletter. Press releases. We use our website. So we have a Tucson Delivers website that we, for pretty much every survey, we are posting on that website and we're directing people to that website. The beauty about getting people to go to those websites is, you know, if we do a virtual meeting, we will post that virtual meeting on the website. So if someone couldn't make the meeting that night, they can still go to that website and see the virtual meeting. When we post a survey, we also post the survey results. So if someone says, well, how did the results of the survey come out? They can go straight to that website and see the results of the survey. So we make all of that information available on the website. I mentioned the emails coming out from the ward offices. We also have information that we can send out from our ActiveNet, our registration software, as well as Neighborhood Nugget and NewsNet. We will sometimes pay for ads on social media to kind of boost those to make sure we hit more people. And then signs, banners in the parks. So if we're doing a meeting in the park and we'll put a sign up, sometimes multiple signs up in the park. And sometimes we've expanded that to even some of the neighborhoods surrounding the park. So that kind of gives you a feel for what are the different tools in our toolbox that we'll try to use. The typical timeline, once we're in design and we start to get an idea of what the elements are that we're looking at planning in a park, you know, we'll develop that survey kind of first. That helps us understand kind of the questions we want to ask the community. Oftentimes we will post that survey about a week or two before we do an engagement process, whether that's virtual or in person. And then we keep that survey open for like two more weeks after that public meeting. The advantage of that is a lot of times people will come to the meeting, just kind of hear the information, ask questions, and that helps them make a more informed decision when they're getting to the survey. And then when we close the survey, you know, we will compile all that data. We provide that information to the project manager and our consultant, and then they will use that information to help develop the designs. And then as we go on through the rest of the process, we go into construction and completion. You know, we got a whole set of tasks that we go through, so, you know, to kind of complete the public relations piece of that, whether that's, you know, a ribbon cutting ceremony, communication, using the same communication methods to make people aware that the project is complete and now open to the public. So that's kind of the final part of the process as we go through a complete project. On the surveys, you know, we ask them how they heard about it. We think this is important to help us understand what tools are we using and are those tools being effective. So as you can see on this diagram, you know, 33% of the people are hearing about these public engagements, meetings, and surveys through social media posts. So that's by far the highest. Interestingly, the second highest one is through family and friends. Now, we don't know how that family or friend heard about it. But we know that about a third of the people are hearing from other people about the survey. So that's good news. People are telling their friends and their family about these surveys and sending them to the website. So that's good news. Then the next three are all in that 9 to 10% range. You get emails from neighborhood associations. You get signs at the park. And then other, and I don't have any idea what other means, but about 10% of the people are finding out about these surveys and meetings from some other source. And then you have some smaller ones, post on Nextdoor, email from Parks and Recreation, postcard mailers. But by far, social media and friends and family are about 60% of the people, or 55% of the people are hearing from those two methods. Pretty interesting. So So God bless Sierra. She has been tracking every meeting since we started Prop 407 in 2019, 2020. And she keeps a spreadsheet with how many virtual meetings we've had, how many user group meetings we've had, how many in-person meetings, and then how many people have responded to surveys. So she's got 20 here, 21, and 22 is on the next slide. And then this spreadsheet goes on forever. So for everyone that we communicate to or we have sent the communication to on a project, she's got the list of that contact information on a spreadsheet here so that we have an easy way of going back and communicating those people going forward. Interesting, if you look at kind of the survey response columns here, and I know this may be a little small on your end, but, you know, we go from a low of 11 survey responses and on this page to a high of 702. And if you start to look at the details, a lot of the smaller neighborhood-type park projects are the ones that have a smaller response, like Tahoe Parks and Neighborhood Park 44, Pinecrest Neighborhood Park 11, Rolling Hills Neighborhood Park a little bit higher, 62, Linden Walking Path 35. So what you see is a lot of the neighborhood parks you're seeing in that anywhere from 11 to 50 is a kind of a good number. As you get to bigger projects like Splash Pad at Udall, 437, GMC Reed Splash Pad 702. So the range is different, but it's really going to be based upon the scale of the project and how big of a net we're trying to cast to hear from people. You know, if I'm trying to get feedback on Pinecrest Neighborhood, I'm not broadcasting this throughout Tucson. I'm focusing our efforts on, you know, the mile radius around Pinecrest Park. So that's why you're seeing smaller results, because that's we're trying to target our marketing and our data gathering from the people who are most applicable to use the park. And then you can kind of see what we've done in 2022. One thing cool, you know, we've done, I don't know how many surveys we got on here, but we're pushing 13,000 responses on surveys in the last 3 years. So getting to Linden specifically, what we did with the engagement in that park, you know, this is a neighborhood park, like I just mentioned, so we weren't expecting a huge response. This process did begin in the summer of 2022. 2020. Thanks, Vera. Mm-hmm. Keep in mind, in March of 2020 is when the pandemic was probably starting to kick off the most. I remember on St. Patrick's Day is when the mayor closed bars and restaurants. So this is kind of the beginning of the pandemic when we started this engagement process. On the right hand, you see what we had put in the bond language as far as improvements at the park, which is a new walking path and replace an existing playground. The one thing about replacing the existing playground at this park, which is a little different than others, the only two playground elements at this park were a monkey bar and a swing set. So there was no other big playground structure. So when we're thinking about replacing, it was really more about adding a new playground as opposed to replacing the existing. So that's when we decided, all right, we did a survey. We talked about the playground. We had 31 responses. In some of those comments afterwards, we saw some comments about walking paths. So we opted to go out and do a second survey to really get a feel for, okay, do people want a playground? Do they want other amenities in the park? So we did a second survey, and it was really about understanding what the priorities were in the park. And we also did an in-person meeting, and I think it was June of 2021 in the park where we had about 50 people attend. So we had really good feedback during this process. You know, the one question we did ask people specifically in this second survey was, do they want a walking path in the park? And it was, you know, 57% in favor, you know, 43% opposed. I will tell you, when we did the in-person event, it was by far more people were very interested in the walking path versus not having a walking path. So I'm going to let Sierra really, one more. Oftentimes Sierra will directly email the neighborhoods that are involved around that park. You know, Linden Park doesn't have a neighborhood association specific to that park. So she emailed all of the key neighborhood associations in proximity to Linden Park and asked them to get the information out about, you know, the online survey, about the meeting in the park and the second survey. So that was the best we could do, was just hitting the neighborhood associations that were around the park, since Linden doesn't have a specific neighborhood association. So Sierra, you want to talk through the specifics as far as the outreach you did on Linden?
Yeah, so I went back through to try to find all the places we mentioned, or we talked about the engagement opportunities and the survey. These are three of the next door posts. Obviously, the first one on the far left, far right, is the playground one, and you can see the engagement, 624 impressions, and there's lots of people commenting on it. The other one was August of 2020, and that was when we first did the amenity survey about the path. And then the final one, August of 21, was for the in-person meeting. Those are the posts on Nextdoor. You can go to the next one. Facebook, we did an ad. I did not post it for the public view, but I did in the back end because you can target the audience to the surrounding community. So I just targeted it to 1 mile radius surrounding that park address and created a Facebook event for it. It had eight comments, one share, pretty good engagement for just that 1 mile radius for that. The in-person event, we posted three signs at the park, which I think the community even mentioned last time. We had it in the Park and Rec Roundup, which we don't normally do for the neighborhood meetings, but I think we were short on some stuff for the newsletter in June 2021, so we did include it there. And then an e-blast to the zip codes surrounding that, with the ones that we have from ActiveNet at least. Then we hosted the in-person event. Like Greg said, there was about 50 people estimated in attendance to show the proposed walking path. And in order to get people there, we had free coffee and donuts. 50 is a pretty decent crowd for that small neighborhood park, at least from the events that I've been to, and for just talking about a walking path, the walking path. Is there any more?
So that's the end of what we wanted to kind of take you through and help you understand what our process is. Happy to answer any questions. I'm going to see if I can figure out.
Manana, see your hand up.
Hey there, Steve. Yeah, thanks. And thank you for that presentation, Greg and Sierra. I have a few questions because I was one who ended up getting the most of the emails and Facebook messages around this situation. So you said you had three signs up. Approximately how large were they and where were they placed?
Oh, gosh. I mean, this is 2021, but it's a linear park. So it's all along the road side of it. And I think you've seen them with
your typical kind of real estate signs.
Like a corrugated.
Kind of smaller to the ground.
Yeah. The corrugated plastic signs.
Yeah. Okay. So one of the things that I discovered about this park when I went and walked it with some community members was that most of the people who live in that area come in the back. There's a back trail into that park. So most of them didn't see those signs in the front and they saw they were quite low to the ground. So that was just one thing. I was just kind of curious. Do you consider this a pocket park or a neighborhood park? You know, where does this qualify as?
This is a neighborhood park.
Neighborhood park. Okay. I was just kind of curious because a lot of the people who are contacting me aren't on Nextdoor, and they're dealing with, I guess, what you would call, eco exhaustion, in general, just exhaustion around city stuff. And they're older, so they're also dealing with like parents and stuff. So they're not on Nextdoor. They're not on a lot of things. And they didn't. I was surprised. A lot of them didn't even know there was a Park and Rec Commission because they're just so tired at this point. And they're not. I don't know how people are finding out about Parks and Rec Commissions. I don't know how the city is going about making sure letting people know that they have a commission they can go to, especially if the ward isn't letting them know that they're contacting. So my other question, Greg, is, when you're dealing with like trees, like when you scroll past there, I was looking, reading the comments, and I saw several comments that said, yes, we need more trees. Yes, we need more trees. Did you guys think about, everybody that's wrote me said that we wanted more trees. We asked for more trees. So was there a survey done about how that you could plant more trees, or was it just a survey that was about putting a pathway over tree roots?
No, I think there, I'd have to go back and look at the specifics of the survey, but I'm fairly confident we would have had additional trees in, as one of the options that they could prioritize. You know, the challenge with putting in new trees is we definitely want to have irrigation to those trees, and we didn't have any funding for the irrigation for the trees. So as we get into a future bond or we find funding for irrigation systems, then that's where we would definitely look at expanding the trees, as we can tie it into an irrigation system to make sure the trees survive.
Yeah, absolutely. And my last question is that if you're going to be putting a pathway directly over root structures that are very shallow, such as eucalyptus trees, do you talk to an arborist? Do you bring in Nicole? What happens there to make sure they're not going to be harmed?
Yeah, we brought Nicole in and kind of looked at it after we laid out the path. We had a lot of discussion with her about what the best options were. You know, we looked at actually routing the path on the eastern side of the trees. The challenge with that would have been we actually would have had to cut roots to put the path in on that side, because they were actually much higher on the surface. Plus, that would have meant we'd had to cut the irrigation off. So if we would have done that, there would have been no irrigation going to the trees, because we wouldn't want the irrigation going over the path. So that would have meant the trees would have gotten no irrigation, so we opted to move the path to the west side of the trees, where, yes, we were going kind of on the roots but didn't have to cut the roots, and it still allowed the water to get to the trees. So we were kind of balancing what is the best thing here for the trees and to still get a walking path in. And so we kind of compromised and talked to Nicole about it. And the big compromise was to not to put in a stabilizer in the DG that is near the roots closest to the trees. So there's about 100-foot stretch by the trees there. We will not stabilize that DG so that the water still will be able to permeate down in through there.
Okay. Well, that's good news. I do think that, you know, that a lot of people didn't know about this, and I'd heard from several of them where they had said, you know, we had 50 people at the meeting, but we all found out the day before. And that was what I was getting from all of the emails. Because they're, you know, a lot of them are business owners and busy, or, you know, working in universities and stuff, and they all came over. I guess just my suggestion, just from personal experience, even with the Reed Park situation, is these little tiny yard signs on the ground. People often confuse them, especially if they're not brightly colored, with stay off the grass signs. No, you know, it's like everyone's attention spans are all over the place. And I know it's hard because you're trying. But if there's any way to get the signs up a little bit higher, especially if there's multiple entrances to the park and people are missing it, that would be my only suggestion to try to help people be able to take the surveys. Because I have a feeling that some of the people who were writing me never got to take that survey. Thank you, Greg. I appreciate it.
We are always open to how we can make our engagement better. Trust me. I mean, it's hard to get everybody, but that's why we try to do a different approach to give us different opportunities to reach people. So
it is, you know, even in my own ability of trying to make signs to let people know, I had to call a print shop and say, if you want to get someone's attention, what colors do you use? And, you know, luckily I had an uncle who worked at a print shop, and he was like, solar yellow with black, you know, it gets their attention. But you know, it's like a big bumblebee. I know it's hard, but I do appreciate you guys doing this. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
Any other questions or comments for Greg or Sierra on the Linden Park? Okay. Are you all still there?
Yep.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure because I didn't hear anything at all. Yes. Go ahead.
No, just answering your question. If we're here, Robin's
okay.
Here.
Okay.
Me too.
All right.
And really, I would appreciate that presentation. That was very insightful. Thank you.
Sure.
Yes, Greg, and I want to thank you and the rest of the department, especially the guys that were out there working at that park when I visited. They were doing the best that they could with the DG, et cetera, to make sure that the trees still got as much water as possible. So I think that was the major concern, and hopefully it will come out all right. All right. Next item on the agenda is the Cushing Street Skate Park Master Plan and Feasibility Study. Whose is this one?
I think this one is mine as well. You're probably getting tired of hearing me, but it'll be the last one.
Okay.
If you remember at the September meeting, we actually did a formal presentation, but we had failed to send out kind of the whole feasibility study prior to that September meeting. So we didn't ask you to actually approve the feasibility study and recommend to mayor and council. So, no presentation today. It's just following up that I believe we have now sent you the full feasibility study. So you had a chance to look at it. Happy to answer any questions you have. From our standpoint, we have continued to meet with ADOT. We met with them earlier this week. They reviewed the feasibility study and just had a few comments. Our plan is we've also met with Ward 1 so far, and we're meeting with Wards 2 and 6, I believe, in the near future, so they can get their comments on the feasibility study. But our goal would be to take a recommendation in the spring to mayor and council to review the feasibility study, adopt the concept, so that we can kind of move forward and try to figure out how do we find funding gaps and get a skate park built under the Interstate 10 on Cushing Street. Lara, did I miss anything?
If I remember, no. There's about $430,000 or something left in the money that has already been allocated that can be used as the seed money to get things started if the plan goes through and is passed.
That's correct.
That's correct.
Anybody else have any questions or comments? So there's no action on this one today. Is that correct, Greg?
If you are ready to, or unless you want to make another presentation on it, we are looking for you all to approve it and move it to mayor and council at some point.
Oh, you are. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay, Robin?
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. If I could go backwards to Linden Park and even Rio Vista with these master plans, hoping they can be put on the agenda, like if you're asking for approval, that it states approval on it, that would be really helpful. And then, so where is Linden Park in the process? And then we'll talk about Cushing Street.
So where is Linden Park in the process?
In this, what's going on with Linden Park? I mean, with the...
So we did the two bond projects that we highlighted in there, which was put in a new playground. We're still finalizing shade structure over that, and we put in the walking path. So we did all the projects that were slated in the bond package.
Okay, so that's complete?
Yep.
Got it. Thanks.
So for every master plan, we are typically going to bring them to you for feedback and comment and for your recommendation for approval before we take to mayor and council. So that's what this one is.
Okay, so if I understand you correctly, Greg, at this point, you need a motion to approve the master plan for the Cushing Street Skate Park.
Correct.
Okay. Do we have such a motion?
Becky, I will make a motion.
All right, thank you, Becky. Back. All right, Becky, is there a second? Can I second it since I'm not the official chair?
Steve, I'm happy to second that motion.
Oh, okay, thank you. It's been moved and seconded to approve the Cushing Street Skate Park Master Plan. Is there any further discussion? All right. I don't see any hands. I don't hear any voices. All those in favor, please say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Aye. Any opposed? Aye. Okay, I didn't hear any opposed, so that takes care of that, Greg. Are you finished, Greg?
I am finished. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Let's go on to reports and announcements. First of all, Parks and Recreation Commissioners reports and announcements.
Uh, I just want to say I attended another event at Quincy Douglas, which was phenomenal. The barbecue, the Kings of Barbecue, and just a great reunion in their community and in the Tucson community. And I just love what they have going on there.
I attended the Family Fun Festival, and that was interesting as usual. I have no idea who won the awards for the best booths, but they sure had some interesting ones and some nice crowds around them. I don't know if this is the appropriate place to ask, so let me know if it isn't. I remember reading in one of the staff reports that there was a job fair that they attended that had to do with recruiting lifeguards. I'm just curious as to what the status of that is, because I know we had several pools that we couldn't open last year because we didn't have anybody to guard them. Is this the appropriate place to ask that information, or should I ask for that to be put on an agenda?
I would recommend we can add that to the agenda. We can talk about a lot of what we've been doing recently towards recruitment. There's quite a lot to report.
Okay.
I think it would be fine. Best.
I'd like to put that on an agenda then as soon as possible.
Steve, I have a question. Is there another?
Go for it.
Okay, thanks. Wait a minute. Can you still see me?
No, we can't see you, but we can hear you.
I think I'm back. Oh, good. Okay. This is Robin, and I am enthusiastic, to say the least, that there's a survey regarding Armory Park and programming. And so kind of along the same lines as what Steve is asking on an update on that and where that survey, when you were speaking about surveys and then public engagement and that process, is that survey leading into a public process of redefining what Armory Park will be, which I think is probably a long time overdue, and the prospect is exciting. I remember years ago we took the whole staff and went around to multi-generational centers in Phoenix and Casa Grande. Okay. And so is that an agenda item? Is there something going on where they're looking at Armory Park?
So just like Shauna had advised us earlier today, if there's something new that we need to discuss, that would be perfect for adding to a future agenda, because then we can have that publicly noticed. So if you want to add that, Robin, that's not a problem.
I'm going to assume that she does. Yes.
I do.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Robin. Anything else, Robin?
No. Thank you. I had a lot to say today.
Anything else from any reports from the Parks and Recreation Commissioners? Becky, Luz, Manon, anybody?
Just reminding everyone that there is a survey for Reed Park going on and the new concept plan to prioritize. And while I'm here, I want to second Robin's thing. It would be really helpful if we're going to be asked to approve a master plan, that would be on the agenda, like approval requested or something each time. Thanks.
That sounds like excellent wording. Yes, something along that line. The only other thing I can think of is I know we have an event coming up for the awards that are supposed to be presented at the mayor's office, and I had intended to be there. However, the end of this last weekend, I came in contact with people who are down with COVID. So I may be in quarantine and may have to miss it.
I'm sorry to hear that, Steve.
So am I.
What is happening with that? I was planning on being there because I wanted to cheer everybody on and see the folks. Robin, are you going?
I sure am.
Okay.
I'll definitely be there.
Well, between Robin and I, we can probably figure it out, Steve.
I think if Diana just sends out the information and then as many of us show up as possible would be wonderful.
Yeah, and I think from what I read, there's so many, there's 27 award recipients.
Yes.
So that their names will be called, and then they'll go up for a photo all together. So I don't think they'll be getting awards individually, right? I mean, is that correct? So
I think that's correct.
We're having them meet us outside. We're giving them their certificates so that they can hold them up for the group photo. The mayor's proclamation, you know, whatever language the mayor has prepared, I'm going to be offering to read it since I think it's going to be lengthy. And then we'll do the group photo with the mayor.
Very good. Looking forward to that.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else on the commission have anything before we go on to the staff report? I don't hear anything. So, Laura, you going to go start from here, or you have somebody else that needs to give a report?
I don't know if any of the other staff have any updates they want to share. Not hearing anything. So, I did want to mention that we recently went up to Peoria to accept two awards on behalf of Ready, Set, Rec. That's our mobile recreation program. So the first award was about youth and was for youth enrichment, and the impact that the vans have on the community itself. And then the second award, kudos to Sierra, was for marketing and engagement, I believe was the term, or public relations. And so we were really excited. I think we were one of the few entities that were presented by the Arizona State Parks and Rec Association with two awards. So that was really cool to bring home those. Also, we accepted from TPL a conservation award for our recent work with the booster pump installation here at Reed Park, because the use of that particular type of equipment is allowing us to be more energy and water efficient. And so they not only did we get the award, but we were able to submit for a rebate towards to recoup some of the cost of that installation. So that was very exciting. And the other highlight that I wanted to share was, you know, thank you so much to both Manon and Steve for coming out to Family Festival. I know, Steve, you were the judge, and so the marble game is the one that won, the one that was right next to where we were set up for the master plan. So in terms of trying to get a figure, an estimate on the attendance, we're landing at about 7,000, which is, that's pretty spectacular when you think about the fact that we haven't had that event in 2 years. It shows how much people really missed it and how much they have happy memories that they brought their kids to do it again. So just want to say thank you again for the support and participating in that. And, I think all of the staff are a little relieved. We're, a little bit out of the event season now. We don't have anything scheduled. Last weekend, we did the Holiday Arts and Craft Festival at Reed, which, I don't have an attendance number on, but I know when I went, it was packed. And that was awesome because so many artisans that were there, 140 with their artwork on display. So those are my reports and announcements.
Okay. Thank you very much, Laura. Let's see if I can read here as the sun goes down. We've already talked about several future agenda items, and we already talked about the next meeting being on December the 28th. Does anybody have anything to add to either of those, or comments or questions? I'm going to assume that the meeting on December the 28th on that Wednesday will be at 3:30 in the afternoon like we normally are. And do any of the other folks on the commission have any requests for items to be added to that agenda?
No.
I do not hear anybody else chiming in, so I'm going to assume that that is the extent of it. As far as our next meeting goes, are we going to continue this route for the rest of this calendar year, 2022, by doing a Microsoft Teams meeting?
I think that it, the option is available for the board to decide on that, but since it probably requires a vote, my recommendation would be we do virtual in December and add it to the agenda if the board would like to move to in person.
That sounds like a good idea. Let's add that to the agenda then for the December 28th meeting that will be on Microsoft Teams. All right. Anything else for the good of the Parks and Recreation Commission or the Parks and Recreation Department? All right. Hearing none then, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve. Have a wonderful holiday, all.
Okay. I'm going to take that as a motion to adjourn.
Oh, motion to adjourn.
I second. And it's been seconded. All right. Very good. All those in favor. Please say aye. All right.
Aye.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And
thank you.
Have a good night.
Good luck and have a good holiday.
Thank you too.
Happy holidays. Happy holidays.
Thank you.